Hello there.
Hey,
Hey there.
can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. How about you, me?
I can. Well, we're on, so welcome to the spiritual.
Involution.
Yes, we are doing it over the phone, not in person, for those of you listening. If you
Hi,
couldn't already
Katie.
gather. Where are you?
I'm actually standing in a condominium looking out over the Carson Valley. I'm in Stateline, Nevada, on the backside of Heavenly Ski Resort. So the front of this place looks at the lake, Lake Tahoe, and the back looks at the Carson Valley. It's really beautiful. And
Oh,
there's
wow.
probably 4 feet of snow that needs to be shoveled on the back deck. But
Nice.
I'm looking over it.
Sounds beautiful. Is it
Yes.
pretty cold there? Because it was really cold here this morning. Woo.
Yes, it was 17 degrees a little while ago.
Woo.
Oh, no,
Awesome.
it's 26.
Ooh, warming up. Toasty.
How are you? How's your world?
Oh, good. Just getting over a little cough, but the world is good. The world is good. I
Yeah,
had
for me too.
I'd been reading a book. I kind of posted something on Facebook, but I thought it could be our topic. But I was wanting to read. I was journaling about it, and I wanted to read it if that was okay with you. But
Great idea.
I was reading a book about. It was a sciencey book about retroviruses of all things. And this, she quoted Joan of Arc, and the quote is, "Act and God will act" by Joan of Arc. And so it just sparked something in me, and I was hoping I could read what I wrote, and then hopefully it'll spark something in you, and you can add on or disagree or agree or whatnot. But it kind of goes into the idea that we've spoken about before about being the spirituality, right? You know, stepping out into action, right? So that's sort of where I was thinking in here. I will go ahead and read it. I said, "We often talk about how to bring our spirituality out of our head and into our being. This quote struck me. It made me ever so aware of the fact that every action we take is God or love or the source, whatever you choose to call it, because we are pure manifestations of this source. Our actions are thus a reflection of our spirituality. Every outward expression, movement, or word is God in action." But it got me thinking, perhaps I had it all wrong or backwards, because I always thought I must evaluate my actions to see if they in fact match my spiritual beliefs. But doesn't this seem to presuppose that the action in question went awry? That in some way the action is a lie or a contradiction that needs correction? This quote made me think that the action is simply a byproduct of the spiritual being, an effect of the cause. This effect or action is shining light on the cause, which is your true spiritual bedrock. So, not what you hope your spiritual beliefs are or what you imagine them to be, some sort of Buddhist and an enlightenment state, but rather your actions are in fact a true indication of who you are showing up as in the world based on your underlying spiritual construct. So perhaps it's not the actions that need to change, but your spirituality. For example, if you're acting overly angry or holding on to grudges forever, maybe there's something inside you that's operating from a place of conflict to your truest nature. After all, compassion for others cannot be extended until you have compassion within yourself. So what you radiate outward is a mirror of what you reflect inward. However, what you truly are is a perfect manifestation of God or love or of the source. So if we only truly were to operate from this place, not just conceptually, but to truly rest in this knowing, the corresponding action could be nothing short of pure spirit in motion. This is our birthright. This is our natural, truest self. Yet how do we remember this self? And that's it.
So, what do you want to do with that?
Well, it got me thinking just about, I think it twisted the way I saw action, because I had been looking at actions as if like, okay, I acted poorly in the world. Like I blew up and yelled at my husband or something. Let's just say that's just an odd example. It didn't happen, but looking at the action as if the action needs to change. Or when we talk about spirituality, like let's show up as our spirituality. But it got me thinking, like, we're already showing up as our spirituality. Our actions are a mirror of that, whether you like it or not. And maybe it's not the action that needs to change, but I should look at the action as if like a clue or something. Like the action's really telling me that I'm not the spiritual person that I'm wanting to be. I'm yearning to be. And it's kind of like a reverse. For me, it was a little bit of a reversal. Like maybe the action just falls in alignment. It has nothing to, yeah, I could change it, but what really needs to change?
Well, the action's already happened, so you don't even change what's happened.
True. I think I just look at it more. You know, I look at like, oh, I want to be more peaceful. I want to be more like these things. But really, if I was operating from this place of pure spirit, that would have never arose. That would have never happened, right? Like there is no effort in the action if I'm coming from that purest place of being. And sometimes I wonder if we have lost our way. I imagine us being born into this state of pure love, and through belief systems or creative experiences or whatnot, we've developed sometimes almost I view it as like an imbalance from that. But if we could find ourselves nestled in that little crevice of that birthright, then every action would just flow effortlessly. There would be no questioning later of your action.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay. I'm thinking while I'm hearing you speak, like, do we have a fantasy about what it means to be spiritual? And so we're always judging ourselves against some fantasy when the thing that's looking at the fantasy is what we are right now. Like what I am is it, looking at the fantasy. What do you think a spiritual person would do or be? Would she never correct somebody? Would she never stop somebody from abusing something? Would she never raise her voice? Would she never get frustrated?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I like the question because I think about going to the gym. You know, going to the gym, sometimes I just don't like it. So I do whatever I can to make myself like it. But what I notice is that that things don't necessarily alter or improve, in my estimation, without some effort or investment, like some resistance. So the resistance actually creates the thing sometimes. Like a kiwi chick, kiwi being the bird, not the fruit, but the native New Zealand bird. The kiwi chick in her egg, she has an eye tooth, a tooth particularly developed so she could peck her way out of the shell. And the pecking takes quite a bit of time, and there's a lot of effort. And there's some part of us thinks, oh my God, if I was spiritual, I would ease the pain and the suffering. I would intervene. I would not let that creature suffer so. But if you do that, the animal will never develop its wings and its muscles and its breathing capacity. So all that's actually developed in the resistance. Are you following?
Right.
So, but it doesn't mean that I'm always moving through the world awake. Sometimes I'm moving through the world trying to get what I want, and other people are in my way. Therefore, I got to execute them, disappear them, reprimand them, correct them. And I think that's what I heard you talking about.
Right. I think when I go back to the quote, you know, act and God will act, it means that since we are a manifestation of God, you know, we are everything. Everything is God, and that includes us, that whatever action we're putting out into the world is in fact God. And when I think of that, it makes me feel very powerful in that what I'm putting out in the world is God, is spirituality, whether you like it or not, and it's how you choose to represent. And to me, when you represent in a way, doesn't mean that there's no conflict. It doesn't mean that you don't allow the bird to struggle to get out, because there is a push and pull of conflict all the time in nature, in how we're supposed to be. But I think when we get caught up in things of attachment or belief systems that we hold dear to us and we fight against that, there can be a struggle with how we come out in the world, and we act in confrontation with the world instead of, I imagine, if you're rested in a place of pure awareness of the true belief that you are a manifestation of God. I mean, not just saying that conceptually, but like, there's moments of time when I'm truly in that zone, and I act in a way that can only be described as a flow. It's like, yeah, there's struggle, but I accept it with some sort of grace, you know? And not to say it's easy to remain in that spot, but I truly think that's like where we're born from. And that's where I'm getting this idea of a pure action follows that. So if you're ashamed or you look back at your actions and you see that it's not something you're proud of, it's an indication that you perhaps weren't completely in that state of pure understanding of who you are truly.
So the action might be the same, but how the action is delivered, or the source point from which the action is delivered, might be distinct. For example, your son's headed toward an electrical outlet with a key in his hand, and you are going to react loudly and quickly, like, no, to make sure he doesn't put that key in the electrical outlet and electrocute himself.
Right.
So you could approach like, no, oh my God, why is this happening? Why do I have the dumbest kid on the planet? Where's my husband? Why am I doing this all alone? I never should have had kids. Or
exactly.
Or you know who you are, and you're operating from your instinct, which is survival of your child and your offspring. The action's the same.
Exactly.
Who are you being when the action's being delivered?
Yeah, that's well said. That's a good example. I often think of the most common one too, of just like road rage, you know, and sometimes you feel your own heart starting to beat faster. You're all worked up and pissed off, and you want to flip the person off or whatever, instead of just resting in the moment and maybe giving that compassion that the person's having a bad day, or, you know, not involving this egoness to get to that level of anger.
So, my dear, what do you want to accomplish in today's message? Like, what do you want this conversation to go?
Well, I guess I wanted to know, how could we take steps to be in that place more often? You know, like, are there ways that we could rest in that place of understanding? I mean, is that ultimately, maybe that's for me the ultimate sense of true spiritual oneness? Or are there ways of unblocking certain things? Have you figured out anything that works for you where you remain in that kind of calm, centered place of kindness and love?
I've been keenly aware of stressors that I feel in my body, and it's been delightful to actually notice them and be an observer, like observing them as opposed to just being them, but like to be separate from them while I watch them and wonder, where's this coming from? And why is that happening? And why are you so wound up? And what's pushing your buttons? And what's got your panties in a wad? And
I haven't heard that saying in a while.
Yeah. How'd you get your panties in a bunch? I was thinking about slowing down, and I know this is a common theme. You hear me say this, and maybe someday I'll just actually slow down. I'll just actually do it. But I have, I've been pondering my mom and dad, and like, what was childhood like for them? They were preteens when World War II was happening, and they became of age right after the war ended. But while they were teenagers, if they went to the movies, that's where they would have seen the news. It would have happened like on a newsreel. I'm likely, Katie, to talk about this on Sunday, because it's really, it's poking at me. So when my mom and dad were kids, they would go to the movies, and they would then see the newsreel. That's how they got their news, mostly. They got that, or the daily newspaper. And I realized just today, the onslaught of information about volcanoes in the Philippines, and what's going on with an impeachment trial, and what side are people on with it, and people texting me and Facebook messaging me and emailing me and calling me because they heard there was an avalanche in Tahoe and wondered how that impacted me. And I realized all this news happens so fast that we really don't have time to slow down and pick and choose or even be related to any of the news. It's just like a constant onslaught of noise.
Right.
But what was it like when my mom and dad were kids? Like, they probably left the movies and they probably walked home and they probably had a conversation about the movie that they saw, and they probably kicked the can or threw the stick or played some games or maybe even like pushed themselves into a corner and started necking or kissing. There was like this really slowed down experience of life, and they might have actually sat down to eat and not ate on the run. And they might have just reflected just a little bit. And while I was thinking about my mom and dad this week, I was wondering, are our human bodies designed for this onslaught of information?
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking not about my mom and dad, but just myself going back and trying to remember the time when I just had a flip phone. You know, and I actually used it for mostly calling people or texting, because now I find myself inundated in my phone for reasons that are rarely for the phone. You know, it's like, oh, I want to look up what I'm thinking. I want to validate the facts on Google, or I want to look up this, or I'm always, you know, looking up stuff or listening to a podcast. It's always, yeah. And I'm wondering I'm not even sure I remember how I was, but I have a sense when I really tried to remember that it was slower. And I don't know if we are meant for it, because it does kind of feel anxiety filled when you become aware, like you said, of your internal feelings. There is an element of anxiety I get when I'm in my phone too much. Like I can feel it. It's not like I can feel it's not healthy.
Let's go to traffic. So I've been pondering as I'm pondering, watching traffic, and wondering, why has traffic patterns altered so much? And here's my noticing. Nobody seems to be driving anymore. People are now just following the car in front of them. So they're taking the cues of when to move next by the person who's behind them, who honks at them or toots at them. Mostly I'm noticing people have their faces down in the palms of their hands, and they're not present doing what's ever happening in that moment. Okay. Are you following so far?
Yes.
So some of my frustration occurs because people aren't necessarily taking opportunities of open space and collaboration and weaving and merging and flow, but instead people are just following the person in front of them. And that seems to be what life is like happening, like that's some automatic thing. So before I go too dark down that hole, I today am pondering what's happening in my own body, not just my head, it's in my body, when there's an onslaught.
Do you find that it's hard to even be present sometimes? Like when you do get those moments of pure presentness where you're in your body and fully in this moment without thinking or in your phone, that it, for me, it's feeling harder to keep that presence.
I have to disappear from people. I have to make myself unavailable.
Mm. Do you take your phone with you or do you leave it?
Well, I'm actually pretty good at taking my phone with me and not using it, but I don't often take places and walk away because we just haven't done it. But today I became acutely aware that I'm going to have to start making time for that. So it's Friday. Friday's typically the day I would have my message pretty much mapped out for Sunday's conversation at the center. And while I'm here in the condo in Tahoe, Mal's working from remotely, and in between telephone calls, he's interacting with me. And I'm noticing, though, that my line of work, what really matters to me and what simmers my my sauce, what melts my butter, what begins to, I know this is really ugly terms.
Simmers my sauce and melts my butter. Where's this podcast going?
What gets me fully alive is time for me to follow an idea in my mind and imagination. And I can't do that with a constant interruption with, hey, what's going on in this calendar? Hey, can you check this flight? Hey, we need to make an appointment to have the skis polished. We need to have these waxed. We need to get the guy out here to shovel the snow. Like this constant interaction.
What you described is probably what I feel is my biggest challenge as a mother. Like that creative process, I truly do feel like I need as well. And having children, they're constantly interrupting that. Mouths like your child that's interrupting you. But.
Yeah, it's true. So
I feel that. I understand what you feel.
No, he doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can speak freely. I can speak freely about him. But I bet everybody's got a Mao in their household. And if not in their household, maybe in their workplace or in their neighbors or maybe in their own head. And sometimes I need to stand in line at a restaurant, stand in line for the public restroom without having my phone in my hand. I like just stand there and wait. I mean, God forbid I have 2 minutes to stare at the cracks on the floor and go, huh, wonder why they chose concrete. Huh, wonder why they chose that glaze and that tile. To begin to wonder just a little bit.
Yeah, we seem to have a problem being bored. Like you never see someone in line without their phone. You know, you could go to Starbucks and wait in line and everyone, no one's just staring around aimlessly looking at the tile.
No,
wondering
and
about it.
By the way, for anybody who's participating in this conversation with their ears right now, I'm just as involved in my telephone as anybody else. But I'm not sure it's a good idea. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. Let's be clear. I just have a suspicion that we haven't quite worked out a balance between using the phone and being used by the phone. I think we're still in an evolutionary period of experimentation.
Totally. And I go back and forth too, because part of me is like, the amount that I've learned since having a smartphone has got to be, I mean, I don't even know, because everything before it involved going to the library and getting an encyclopedia. I mean, the amount you can just quickly get information is mind-boggling, and I'm obsessed with it. But it does seem like
Katie, that information doesn't necessarily relate. It doesn't necessarily translate to knowledge.
I know, but I still like the idea when you could have, you know, a thought like, oh, when did that law pass?
No, I love that. Of course, of course.
Google has it in 5 seconds for you.
if you happen to be a curious type like you and I are, that's and one of the costs is I'm no longer related to the geography, like learning landmarks and certain tree patterns and rock formations, because I'm looking at the screen telling me to turn right or turn left. Yeah. I'm not sure if there was a power outage, I could get out of here.
Well, I think I'm not even related to pauses in my brain. Like the quietness, I filled so much with inquiry and looking things up that, like you said, just standing in line looking at nothing is harder for me now than it was in the past.
This whole time we've been talking, I'm standing in the same place and I'm looking out at this mountain range in the distance. It's the range that's to the east of the Carson Valley, and it's covered in snow because there was a big storm last night.
But I'm staring at a wall behind a door so my kids won't come in.
But isn't it delightful? We've had this conversation and we haven't been looking down at more information or virtual stuff.
Well, right. I mean, I do value this podcast weekly because I do that, and I enjoy conversation, human conversation, but I definitely am aware more that like the phone is taking a little bit more time, that I probably need to find that balance, like you said. I mean, there's some great parts about it, but to find that balance and to feel more calm in those quiet, serene moments rather than antsy to like do something. Like my brain is not sure what to do with this quiet time anymore.
So how are we on what you wanted to accomplish in this conversation today?
Well, we kind of diverge from the original topic, I think, which I don't know what was. I bring up whatever comes to my head as, you know, the week progresses, and that quote just kind of caught my attention, and I liked how it turned something I'd thought about before a little bit on its head, a little bit for me. Just understanding action more as a an effect of the cause, you know, rather than...
Well, my actions. So actually, I think everything we've talked about has been about that quote you started with. The action you might have to take is to leave some blank, some white space on your calendar. You might have to leave some device-free, internet-free, electronics-free space on your calendar. You may actually need to go walk in nature, even if nature is just around your block. Check out the trees or roses or weeds in your neighborhood. Get related to the earth. Related to it.
And that goes back to what I was saying, because if you were to ask me what my spiritual beliefs are, I would tell you that. I would tell you it is being close to nature. Yet my actions, which are perhaps being in the phone too much, is actually showing me that that's not really my spiritual belief right now. It's my lofty spiritual belief. It's what I hope for, but it's not what I'm being. That's not where I'm operating from. And so that's kind of what I was getting at. The twist is, if I really am what I say I am, which is connection to nature is where I feel God, then I should be walking. I should make that the priority. I should make that the ultimate place of where I'm acting from. And if that truly was where I was acting from, I would be out in nature more. I would be walking more. I would be doing those things more. The action would feed itself from my belief.
Can I argue with you just a little bit on that?
Yes, of course.
Because I actually believe that you are authentic in your expression of who you believe yourself to be spiritually. So I don't think any time you spend looking on Google negates what you know to be so. It may just show that right now you think that that's more important, that action is more important, like the Google action is more important, let's say, than putting on your, taking off your socks and being barefoot on the grass in your backyard. But it doesn't mean that your belief in spirituality is not rock solid.
I think you're giving me an easy way out, but I'll take it.
Katie, I know you. You're the real deal. I know that. I know you.
Well, the real deal needs to acknowledge their weaknesses, and I think...
Well, let me tell you one of your strengths that I noticed today. I noticed today that you actually take time to open a box of organic fruits and vegetables that are delivered to your door from local farms. And you actually rummage through the box to find whatever it is that they've sent to you, whatever it is you didn't even order. And you open that box and you pull out, what is it, celery, hearts of celery?
It's a celery root. It's so pretty.
Yes, and you're going to slice it and make some kind of you wrote like celeriac steaks. And I thought, that sounds like an illness for somebody who's gluten intolerant. But the point is, you spent time in nature in your kitchen. Now, you don't notice that because you're so in touch with it. But I notice it because I don't do that. But the way you handle fruits and vegetables and the way you utilize them for the well-being of your family's physicality, that's pretty holy. And let's stop there. Let's just stop there. Well, everybody should get some celery roots and check out Katie's Facebook page to see what people have to say on their advice on what to do with that.
I followed their advice. Instead of making the steaks, I boiled it in a broth that I had made previously to make some bok choy. And then I pureed it and put it in rice. And it actually made the rice delicious. John was like, "What's in this rice?" I was like, "Celery root."
Wow.
So cool. I kind of created something cool with it. But yeah, it's really, I thought it was such a cool looking plant. I've never really seen one before.
Katie, yes. Do you get that's nature?
I get its nature. I get it.
That's it. I love you. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great day.
Okay. Ta-ta.
Ta.
Bye.